Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Today on Lulz, we're going to be hitting on a few different topics within the world of best ball and sports betting. We also got an update to the launch of the Endgame Syndicate, Brian's new site. All that today on Lulz with Pete and Brick.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Brian, has the Endgame Syndicate officially made an offer to one Mr. Davis Matic to come into the fold and take you guys to the next level?
We tried to. He wanted half the company. He wanted to rename it the Matic Syndicate.
And didn't you say he also said that he wanted you guys to refer to him as the real Yuta? T's and P's, and also legitimate shout out to our buddy Davis Matic, who's leaving his job at the Sports Grid and is, for what I can tell, very much in the market for some new gigs, or at least your subscribes on his Patreon, where Brian is actually a frequent guest doing some nerd content over there. But yeah, we roasted Davis pretty good on this whole cast yesterday. But if I can let the joke facade down for a second, I do hope Davis lands on his feet quickly, Brian.
Oh, yeah. He'll be fine, I'm sure of it. But it would be nice if people sign up for his Patreon, you know, if you listen at all, just to help out a little bit.
Exactly. And I know it's so funny because Davis like has a fire lit under him now, which is what happens when you don't have like the stability, right? You're like, all right, it's hustle time. And I was mentioning to the Swolecast, our group chat, I was like, hey guys, I'm going to be out next week because I'm going to Colorado. I was telling Brian that as well. No Lulz next week, by the way, although there might be a fake Lulz with Davis. But anyways, I mentioned in the Swolecast group chat, normally like when one of us is out, it's just like, okay, are we not going to do it? Someone's like, should we find a guest? And then nothing ever gets done. And Davis goes, I'll find a guest. I might even find us two, because he's got to get that episode in to be able to, you know, file his time card for his Swolecast fee. So I was like, I've never seen Davis this motivated.
Now those time cards are finally getting filled out promptly.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You can't rest on those laurels anymore. But yeah, I think Davis did have quite a busy day yesterday. People sliding into his DMs, you know, someone with Davis's skill set who can write, who can podcast, who can do video, who can ship post. That skill is in demand, being able to do all of that. So I do think Davis will land on his feet pretty quickly.
Yeah, and that Daily Roto, right? Sports Grid was Daily Roto. I can't remember all the iterations. And
yeah,
they've been playing around with their business model for a while. So
what are you going to do? Davis has been there so long. Like, Davis was there when what? Dink and Leone were there before those guys left for ETR. I mean, it's been a long, he had a long run there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it just makes you wonder, why didn't ETR sign Davis too? I don't get it.
Yeah. I think, you mean like way back then at the time?
No, I think those guys left voluntarily, and then
yeah,
eventually became with the deal. I'm just joking around.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, obviously Davis would have way more thoughts about this, but it does seem like Sports Grid over the years has been very much moving in a direction of sports betting, and that's kind of where their primary focus is. And Davis was like the tent pole of their fantasy football coverage. It was like everything fantasy football related is going to be you. And I think some of these companies now just don't necessarily see a path forward to making a ton of money from fantasy. It's one thing if you're only doing fantasy, like over at Fantasy Life, it's like, we are fantasy. Like, that's what we're doing. It's another thing if it's just like a part of what you're doing, and then you're still trying to monetize that.
Yeah, it's gotta be tough to, like, I mean, it does feel like the actual businesses within this world are kind of like the power is shifting, right? Because like when we first started, it was just RG basically, and then Daily Roto was fairly popular for a while. There was other ones like 4for4 kind of like got in to DFS from season long, if my memory stands. And then, you know, over time it started switching. Stochastic definitely made a mark, right? ETR. Am I forgetting anybody else? Yeah. So there's just like all these changing dynamics where it's gotta be tough. I know I talked to one of their CEOs or something years ago, and he was always talking about going in more like a providing content direction, like providing content for like ESPN, not ESPN directly, but more like video and stuff like that, away from the Daily Roto model.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, I really have no idea, like, really what I would do in those situations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Like, I do think ETR has, like, carved out a cool niche where they're able to do kind of straddle those worlds as far as being, like, very deep in the weeds with the DFS and them originating their own projections and their sims and stuff, and obviously dialed in on the player level, but then able to apply that same kind of high level analysis to best ball. And I think because you have someone like Leone who can like port over that DFS knowledge to the best ball space and kind of find that overlap and stuff, I think they can probably kind of move their audience from like, hey, you're really into DFS, there's a lot that applies here in best ball, or maybe vice versa. Maybe a lot of the best ball bros who come in for it are like, you know what, I do want to try out DFS, try the solver, these sims you're talking about. Where I think for a lot of sites though, that kind of cross-pollination at a high level is really hard.
They're also like, they got their start, you know, Levitan, right? And Silva is like a season long home league bros, like providing that sort of content, right? Am I
yeah,
misremembering that? Can you, no. What do you think? Can you make money off of season long bros anymore?
Well, it's crazy. Like, there's different ways to think about this. You know, I had my eyes opened recently to Dynasty Football, which is a season long, smaller market, niche market, and that content just on YouTube. And again, I'm not saying like making money through products and stuff, but that space is blowing up right now. There's been channels who have added tens of thousands of subscribers just focusing on Dynasty. And there's no Dynasty industrial complex that is like pouring money into this. It's not like there's an underdog who's like, hey, everyone talk about best ball. It's like all organic. So it's this weird thing where I do think there's still enough interest for it, but it's, can you build products that people actually want to buy, or are you just going to monetize through content and advertising?
How are there that many people playing Dynasty fantasy football?
It's crazy, man. I do think it's like a buy. I was talking to this with Ray G. He does a ton of Dynasty content on YouTube, has one of the bigger Dynasty channels. And I had him on Best Ball After Dark a few weeks ago. And he was saying that it all centers around the NFL draft. And I think that's happened with best ball too. Like, so much of the enthusiasm for early drafting is these rookies. In the NFL draft and prospect analysis becoming like a year-round thing, people watching the college guys trying to project where they're going to go, trying to forecast how good they're going to be in the league. I think that tide has lift like all the various boats within the fantasy space.
Hmm. I would put that like just under sports betting content in terms of boredom. Like, I would, or just hard to do to make interesting. Is sports betting's like very hard to make interesting, but Dynasty seems like what are you going to show? Like, at least in DFS, you could build a lineup or something like that. With basketball is probably the best, right? Because it's more like poker. You're playing against other guys. What they do matters. Guys can tilt, stuff like that. Dynasty, what do you – I mean, you know, yeah, I would trade a, you know, third rounder next year for, you know, Keon Coleman now would be a great trade, you know. Like,
yeah.
No.
Do you know what? I also think one of the reasons best ball has a big advantage is – And I guess DFS to an extent, now that we've had kind of like the monoculture around DraftKings, where it's like everyone talks about DraftKings salary. Everyone talks about underdog ADP. It's like no one even bothers now. Like, yeah, occasionally we get the second parentheses and he's 8,300 on FanDuel. But when you have that shared language where everyone knows the rules, the settings, and it's a standardized conversation. With Dynasty, it's like, well, mine's tight end premium. And someone's like, well, mine has 16 or people and yours has 12. And it's like not as transferable, where anyone can hop into an underdog conversation and we're all working off of the same rules.
Right. It's another strike against how hard it must be to make content. But, I mean, I guess they're gaining tens of thousands of subs, so they must be doing something right. Yeah. You know, but that's also still different, Pete, as you know, like being in this world. You could have 40,000 subs and not make any money. You know, you can have 40,000 Twitter followers and not make a dime. So if you're giving it away, it's different than running a site that makes money, you know, that pays employees and
yeah,
worth your time and effort too. So, I mean, do you think Fantasy Pros makes a ton of money?
I think so. They also have one of the biggest YouTube channels in the space. And like, you can go look at some of the most viewed fantasy videos last year. They're all on the Fantasy Pros channel. I think they make a shit ton of money.
The start sit show was huge back in the day. I haven't watched it in a while. I always thought somebody in our world should steal that and do it again. That seemed to be like super popular, like a, you know, like a 10 o'clock start sit, Sunday, 10 o'clock, whatever, around there.
Yeah.
Start sit for an hour.
Yeah. It's so funny because I've noticed this with myself with Sunday content. You know, like, we had a lot of people who loved the tilt space. There's a lot of people, you know, who do the shows like early Sunday, myself included, but don't want to necessarily do it the 90 minutes before lock right after inactives are released, because everyone's like doing their own fantasy stuff then. Like, you're preparing, or you've had a busy week, you know, preparing whatever, and now you just want to sit back on the couch and watch Red Zone and enjoy it. So I don't think a lot of people want to do content from 90 minutes before kickoff until like Sunday Night Football, because it's like,
yeah,
it's been a long week. And I think if you were hungry to go after that time of like, yeah, I'm going to be the 90 minute start sit show, or I'm going to be the one willing to live stream when the 1 p.m. games kick off, you could have a lot of success. It's just no one wants to do that.
Yeah. They were getting like 5,000 live concurrents or something last time. This is a few years ago.
Yeah. I believe
you could do it Saturday. You could probably do it Saturday, but you're not going to get all those last minute guys who are setting their lineups on Sundays.
Well, I've even been thinking about this, Brian. I'm curious your thoughts from like a DFS angle, because, you know, now that I'm doing weekly videos on the Deposit Kingdom channel, and I've been starting to think, okay, what is this going to look like in season from a pre-recorded thing? Cause like, I do my crams on Sunday morning and we have a lot of information by then. You know, I do it like 10 to 11:30. So maybe not every single final morsel, but like most of what's going to come out is known. If I'm doing these pre-recorded videos where I have my editor edit it, I'm thinking, all right, maybe I like can record this on like Friday afternoon, try to get it out Saturday, so it's still somewhat fresh. But even then it runs the risk of growing stale. And I'm trying to think, what would like pre-recorded but valuable DFS content look like?
I don't think and we're talking NFL still, right?
NFL. And so I'm thinking like hybrid, like talking about DK salaries and then like underdog battle royale, scroll the F down plays, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think you could still do it early for NFL. I don't NBA. No. I still don't understand how sites were doing like, you know, 8 a.m. shows on the same day. And it's like, this is going to, on a large slate, this is going to be totally irrelevant like 6 hours from now. So like NBA, no. MLB is kind of tough, but much better than the NBA. PGA and MMA are good ones.
Yeah. Because if MMA, if you get rugged, it's like during the during the event, right? Or like right before. It's not going to be.
And like you, and like, so Conor McGregor seemingly it's not going to fight, right? Who knows? But like, you're not doing that. You're not doing that yet anyways, right? You would, you will probably know that by the time you would end up doing a video for your YouTube channel. So both of those sports are perfect. NFL is pretty good. So like, I mean, yeah, we care about the hour and a half before lock because that's when the final rosters come in. I mean, not every week does that matter though.
Yeah. And the thing I'm actually thinking about, and like people are brainstorming here, like top five players who are projected to be overowned, top five who are at lower ownership, something along those lines. One thing I do think is it's easier to do this for the underdog battle royale drafts, right? Because those will open up on a Monday. There'll be like 4 days of ADP by then. Rankings and projections will come out. And I can kind of zoom back and be like, oh, these guys are underdrafted relative to their projection. These guys are, oh, here are my five hidden gems. Here's my favorite stack. I think the DFS stuff is where it's so much easier to do that on Sunday after the Shefty bombs. Because it's like, if someone gets ruled out in your underdog draft, well, guess what? The next highest guy in your ranks is getting thrown into your lineup. It's not like it changes everything. So maybe the thought is I do more focus it on, I make the videos like battle royale kind of strategy focused and then backload the DFS stuff for Sunday morning in a live stream format.
And a lot of guys for battle royale, a lot of guys who will be relevant for DFS won't be relevant for battle royale. So like, even though some guy's going to start, it's like, yeah, but that's just because his salary's so cheap and he's now, you know, he's now expected to get 14 carries when he was expected to get three, you know, now he's like an actual viable DFS out, but he's not even going to be in the, you know, drafted very frequently at all in a battle royale. Cause you're not picking that many players. So it's like, doesn't even matter that much.
And I thought though, one thing that would be fun, and maybe you could still do this, like, where it's still through mainly the lens of battle royale, but you're looking at projected ownership for DFS. Cause one of the kind of little shortcuts to finding some good scroll down plays is who is the chalk punt plays on DraftKings that week. You know, normally there'll be like the 3K guy who's going to be 35%, not a great DK play. And then you go over to underdog and he's getting drafted in less than 5% of the contest. And so that could be like a fun one of like, hey, don't play Greg Dortch at 25% ownership. Just go over to underdog and you'll get him at 1%. And using that as a way to be like, if you want to get exposure to a guy, go do it over here.
Yeah, definitely. Either for Battle Royale DFS, though, I would like, you know, if you're doing your Friday or Saturday show, like the Cardinals, we have, you know, these two backup, these running backs are questionable. So, like, here's what to look for come Sunday morning. Because, yeah, all the DFS regs know that they have to wait till Sunday morning and then re-update their stuff and then redo everything. But most people watching a lot of these YouTube shows, they don't know that, oh, I'm supposed to be waiting on news come. So, like, just even putting that in there would be something useful. And I suppose that could come out Saturday night in a Shefty bomb, and now you're a little stale, but whatever.
Well, and I do think the more I think about it, that dynamic you're talking about, say there's uncertainty in a situation of like, which running back's going to get the start? Is this guy going to sit? And this guy, that actually often provides actionable opportunity in a battle royale draft, because that uncertainty is saying, oh, we're not going to draft this guy. Then once the news comes in, their ADP is going to jump up to a more efficient place. In DFS, you don't get to act on anything. Everyone acts on it at the exact same time. Right. So at least having that video out ahead is be like, yeah, we're waiting on the Shefty bomb on Zach Moss or Jonathan Taylor. Draft a shit ton of Zach Moss right now, because if JT's ruled out, he's going to be a first round pick.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or vice versa. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of like the strategy there. You probably want to draft a shit ton of the guy who's questionable, because you're getting, what you're suggesting is you're getting this fragility benefit that if he does play, you now your ADP is like double what you got him at. But the benefit of taking the questionable guy is if he is ruled out, at least you get a backup. At least you get your next guy on your list, right? Where Zach Moss, you know, whoever the backup is that we're using here, he might now his ADP was actually accurate. You know, he's probably only going to get 10 carries. Where Yeah, where if Taylor or whoever the questionable player is gets ruled out, you get a whole fresh player.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be the maneuver there. But either way, I get your point, and yeah, I agree with it.
Yeah, this has actually been helpful for me kind of already talking out and thinking how I want to do it. I mean, Consigliere says each week might present itself with a broader picture, like elite tight end. I will say, like, I really enjoy the offseason because I can dig into these broader things and, like, I'll spend a lot of time working on them, researching them, you know, pulling together multimedia. I mean, everyone knows when the season comes around, it's like we all have our things we got to hit, you know, whether it's content, whether it's brick getting ready for slates or whatever. It's harder to, like, have time once the NFL schedule starts to just be able to pull back and be like, all right, let me make kind of an evergreen macro strategy thing as opposed to, you know, getting into player specific stuff. And like the same thing happens with DFS content too. Like you listen to going back to ETR, Establish the Million or something, like, yeah, they're going to touch on some broad macro DFS concepts, but they're going through the plays. They're saying who's underowned. And it is hard, I think, to get away from player specific stuff in season. One, because people aren't as interested in it. And two, it's just hard to find the time for it.
Yeah. One of the benefits of the out of season is just like, you don't have that Sunday lock or that Sunday roster news. So like you could talk about, you know, all the shit you want about any player. And like you got three months before any of this stuff even starts. So it's actually pretty good for content. I guess, except for like, maybe like the Rashid Rice's type of situation. I don't even know. Is he cleared yet? To go? What's the deal?
No, it's like the classic. It was kind of similar with the Kamara stuff last year. It's like, you know, some kind of suspension is coming, but we just don't know what it is yet.
So like between 2 and 6?
I think most people, the ballpark I've heard would be like 4 to 10 is kind of why it's so wide open. I would be pretty surprised if it was less than 4. And yeah, I think I'd be pretty surprised if it was more than 10. Yeah, and as CLN saying here, Rice court date is in November. He might not even get penalized until next year. This is what happened with that Kamara thing, because that was like 2 years ago, and then it got punted to last year. And so it's one of those spots. How many times? It's like if you were to just try to make a macro bet on how these things play out, you would fade the suspension risk every single time. Like you would be right like 90% of the time with these situations. Like, everyone gets worried though. What if this is the time that Roger Goodell puts his foot down to make an example out of Rashi Rice and he gets suspended for the whole year?
Right. Didn't they just suspend someone for a year though or something?
They've who are you thinking?
Cause I was just thinking, I remember someone saying like Ray Rice or whatever. Yeah. You know, only got 4 games famously. And then whoever got suspended, I'm thinking I've got suspended for a long time. Like didn't, you know, beat their wife. Ridley. Yeah. Maybe it was Ridley.
Yeah. Yep. And it's so funny too. Like, you know, Jameson Williams and a couple other Lions players had gotten busted for betting on college football games while on the Lions facility. And then Jameson Williams' suspension got knocked down to 4 games. And then like Quintus Cephas and the other random dudes still had like their full like suspension held up too, where it was like, and I'm sure there was a specific reason for it, but it is another thing. Like the bigger of a superstar you are, like the more leniency you're going to get in those spots, it seems like.
I mean, it's the NFL too. Their decisions do not make any sense, but yet they still keep crushing. So what do I know?
Yep. If Rice isn't suspended this year, he's a massive discount. Absolutely. Yeah. He was in the big board, like before, like the incidents happened, he was like a 2-3 turn pick, and now he's going like pick 75 to 85 in most drafts.
Seems kind of high.
Well, again, that was before they drafted Xavier Worthy. This was before he was drag racing, all that good stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a risk taker. So, you know, that type of drafter goes there. They're like two peas in a pod taking risk.
I thought I was going to get you making like a fantasy ball knowing criticism of Rashi Rice's game. You're going to call him like a screen PPR merchant or something there.
I just didn't think he was racking up that many points last year in DFS to get in a second round, but
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, he finished the season really strong. And then the classic thing of, hey, the Chiefs like bottomed out last year as far as their passing offense, you know, like the worst of Mahomes' career. And then a second year wide receiver who flashed efficiency in year one, everyone's like, fucking sign me up. Like, I will buy into that. And then Rashi Rice said, I'm going to make it a lot harder than that for you, buddy. Let's see here. I wanted to talk about a few different kind of sports betting things. There were some interesting tweets that came across our radar this week. Brian, I think I'll first pull up this one from Taylor Cabey over at ETR. You guys have heard us mention Taylor on this show before. The CEO over there, and he was replying, Brian, to a comment about ESPN's bet share. And I believe this is data for Maryland, the sports betting handle. It dipped below 5% in May, and you can kind of see it month over month here this year, continuing to decrease. Brian, we had talked about the acquisition of Penn by ESPN at the time and said we weren't sure if this was going to work, especially if it didn't work for Barstool. And it seems to be playing out in that direction.
Yeah, I'm going to say we call this. It's, I guess they could make a comeback. You never know. ESPN's just such a, I don't know, stale brand that like no one under 50 cares about anymore. They kind of ruined a lot of goodwill they had in the 90s and, you know, whatever, 2000s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So that was the reason I was saying, like, listen, if you think doing this deal, like just giving Barstool, because how much did they lose in the Barstool deal? I wasn't it like $500 million, or
it was a lot.
Just giving him back the company for free.
Yeah.
And so you add that with the deal they paid ESPN, which we looked up before the show, and it's 1.5 million billion, excuse me, billion cash, and then $500 million in stocks. So $2 billion there. To get the ESPN name and whatever requirements they must have negotiated to do this deal. So like, I mean, is there any spin? Have you heard any spin where this is like not that bad or anything like that, or this is what they were expecting?
No. And that's what I was saying to you and maybe someone in the chat, like I don't consume a ton of ESPN content and definitely not, you know, like TV content. Have they been pushing to integrate ESPN Bet or like, hey, log into our app to bet on, like, have they done any good or organic marketing? Or, you know, you think about some of the stuff that succeeded in a massive way for FanDuel, like obviously their stuff with Pat McAfee, tail his Super Bowl slip, or the Gronk thing, you know, they did these big stunts to like drive conversion. And obviously Barstool was the king of that as well, but I just like, I haven't seen anything from ESPN actually trying to drum up enthusiasm for getting on their app.
Remember when gambling was like about to be legalized and a lot of the critics were like, think about ESPN. They're going to have sports betting in their ticker. They're going to have sports betting shows. They're going to be pushing gambling on the youth of America. It was like a scare tactic that, ooh, ESPN might do this one day.
Yeah.
Turns out that didn't even matter, even if they are doing it.
So here was what Taylor said in response to this. He said, this is essentially proof that a massive sports audience and A-plus brand recognition are not sufficient to keep to compete with DK and FanDuel in the U.S. sportsbook market, which begs the question, what is? Most people point to product, but true product differentiation is really hard for many reasons, and I continue to be skeptical many, if any, can even match, much less outcompete DraftKings FanDuel there in the long term. I think Underdog has the best chance, though. If I were them, I would strongly consider trying to become the number one or two traditional DFS operator, as FanDuel has clearly given up there, while DK has much bigger ambitions and is clearly milking their DFS business to reinvest elsewhere. It will take a long time, but could see the Underdog brand being a strong number three overall in the same way FanDuel, DraftKings built their businesses. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So, you know, despite what I said, like where he says an A-plus brand, and I was just shitting on ESPN brand. They still are, you know, an A-plus brand. You know, it's pretty hard to deny.
especially with an older demographic, right?
Right.
It's eight plus for people over 30, you know?
Yeah. And DK and FanDuel succeeded because of DFS, right? Is this like, are we going to say they succeeded for another reason? Like, cause I feel like they converted all the DFS people who've signed up for DFS over the years. It's got to be a very similar demographic of guys who would do both things. And that's how they just had this base ready to go day one or whenever they were legally allowed to go live, depending on the state. And that's just a huge advantage. Like, I mean, is the product that much better? I mean, they've gotten better, like, but it's not that great.
Cause I'm only seeing this from the outside, but I feel like a good indicator of like, oh, is there something that comes across our way where they're doing a really creative promotion or something? I truly wonder if their thought was, hey, all we have to do is get our name associated with this. That will give the consumer confidence that this isn't scammy. It's legit. This is a safe place to put your money into sports bet, and everything else will just work itself out. You know, we'll run a few ads during commercials and the dads watching golf on a Sunday will pile in and make bets. And it's like, that's not really how this works.
Right. Yeah. I imagine some, they all thought it was like cigarettes or something, you know, like we just need to get them a little addicted and then they'll use our product. You know, I don't think they took it. I don't know what the word is, seriously. Yeah. But that's the only way I can see that this happening is it was just kind of an aberration that they went down the DFS route because of the legal changes. They thought they were legal. And it was legal enough to be in this gray area to build up a big product. And then the fact that they, you know, they had to lobby to get DFS legal means they're already at every state in the country with lobbyists and relationships with lawmakers, which is going to help. And it's going to help you like with the gaming commissions and stuff of those states. Like that definitely all helps, but it's actually pretty disappointing because we as players want competition, and this is not a good sign that there will ever be competition. Like back in, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, CBS was really considering getting into DFS, and they had a big season-long product. I always liked their season-long website, and they pulled out. Who knows why? Maybe they didn't like the legal landscape. But I don't know if ESPN can't even make a dent. Barstool got canned. CBS is pulling out. It's I don't know. I think it's like DraftKings monopoly in America from here on out. It's the most likely path.
So what do you think about Taylor's idea here? I assume when he says become more of a traditional DFS operator, he means adding salary cap DFS. Right. Because Underdog's obviously doing a ton of daily stuff as is, but really widening that moat with salary cap and maybe even other game formats, weekly game formats.
Well, I would personally like them to do that. I think that would be good for me. I mean, if you go hard at DFS, DraftKings is probably going to use their lobbying efforts to screw you even harder. You have to consider that. But maybe they're doing that anyways. And so if they are doing it anyways, then why not?
That's a good question, Brian. Do you think DraftKings sees a distinction between Underdog as a DFS competitor, whether it's a draft game or a salary cap game, or is it just all the same to them?
Oh, I think they would see, yeah, if you went to try to beat FanDuel and become the number two DFS, I think they would not like that. Yeah. Compared to best ball. They never did anything with best ball before. They probably, I mean, I think we know based on some tweets and, you know, some laws and stuff that DraftKings is kind of going after Underdog. I also think that's kind of why Underdog released that, what was it called? Like some sort of
ID
like
pair match
ID thing. Yeah. Most people thought it was like to get the sharps. It's like, yeah, maybe it is. I don't know. I think it's more of like, hey, we're signaling to legislators throughout and gambling commissions throughout the states that we are concerned about problem gambling and we want to be leaders in this, you know, that type of deal. But that would be nice if Underdog tried some DFS. I'm kind of surprised. Why haven't they?
My on it's like with the way some of the stuff works, like it seems like it's always back to tech stuff and having to build that out from a tech perspective, honestly, seems like the thing. I wonder if they think through, like, would this water down our momentum for our daily games and in our best ball and kind of our core thing of what we do well? Like, could we do salary cap DFS at a really high level? I don't know. What do you think?
There's a couple companies they could have bought over the last few years that True. Had working DFS sites. I don't know if that would have actually worked, but I'm sure that's definitely some of it. Like, that's a big headache to add that aspect. Maybe they don't want to antagonize them. They were, you know, no pun intended, a little underdog in all of this. So stepping on those, you know, toes of the big boys after they became legal and made all these relationships with legislators, and they don't have any sports books, right? That the DraftKings and FanDuel bought sports books in legislative districts, like brick and mortar casinos. And that's a big boon and a reason for a legislator to support you over some outside company that doesn't have business in their state, doesn't employ any of their constituents, stuff like that. So, like, that would probably be something I think I've suggested on the show a while ago, is they should probably start buying some casinos.
Yeah, I guess the other part of this conversation, though, would be, you know, the thesis for DraftKings and FanDuel that, you know, Taylor's talking about here is that they would get people in the door playing fantasy games, and then that's the perfect on-ramp to becoming a sports bettor. I think you could maybe argue at this point, at least of the traditional salary cap DFS, you know, trajectory, that are draft games in best ball a better on-ramp than salary cap DFS? Like, what does adding salary cap DFS do other than getting existing DFS players over onto your site who might otherwise wouldn't be there?
That's a good point. I'm not sure. Honestly, does it matter if they have, and there's going to be a lot of overlap either way from if you start a DFS product between best ball and DFS, right? Like, that cohort, mm-hmm. it's gotta be 60, 70, 80% overlap for the same dudes anyways. Yeah, that's a good point. Do you have any reasoning why that would?
No, that's why I would be curious to get Taylor's thoughts on that as well, because that would be my concern of, like, maybe you can accomplish this, what he's kind of suggesting, by making the draft games even better and bigger and more robust and more offerings and more levels and more, you know, as opposed to trying to build up a salary cap game from scratch.
Yeah. He's not directly making that claim, though.
Yeah.
I think he's just saying more broadly here that FanDuel's left an opening and they should take advantage of it. Maybe that's kind of his, and it's, you could kind of conflate in your head that, oh, does he saying that then that would mean they'd convert more people to sports betting in the long term. But yeah, maybe he's just saying there's an easy path here to get into DFS. They should do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting topic there. And then another tweet, you had sent this over to me. Underdog had hired Dylan Borghita, I think is maybe how you pronounce it here, as the vice president overseeing all VIP strategy and operations. I believe he had a background at both DraftKings and FanDuel, at least DraftKings he was there. And then Jeremy said, we waited to build our VIP program because we want to do something different. There's no doubt Dylan is the guy to lead it. He's got some amazing ideas that I can't wait to bring to life. What were your thoughts when you saw this?
Well, first I want to compare back to the Penn ESPN deal.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, this is just a ridiculous thought experiment. Don't you think that $3 billion or $2.5 to $3 billion they wasted? Couldn't you just, like, directly give that to people and, like, buy them? You know, I mean, that's so much money. And I was thinking, like, oh, this VIP program, couldn't they have done like an awesome VIP program, you know, combined with just like getting influencers on board, right? On, you know, online, forget the old model. With 3 billion, they could have done so much.
Well, kind of like the early Yahoo DFS model, right? Where there's just all these rake free, all of these contests. And it was like, think about how many rake free contests you could roll out with that kind of bankroll to just get people on the site and be like, you are just going to play without rake for like the next 3 years, basically.
Yeah. And it worked kind of. They got pretty big from no advertising. I don't remember seeing it. I mean, I guess they did a little bit of advertising. But yeah, Yahoo's DFS, you're talking about their DFS product, right?
Yeah.
They went from nothing to they didn't do that with their best ball product. And they didn't innovate with the best ball product at all. And people don't even know this. They've had one for a long time. And then there you go.
I do like thinking about all of this stuff. It triggered the way you said, you know, that they didn't do much with their best ball product, and even FanDuel, you know, for a second had their best ball product or whatever, where it's like, I wonder how much of this isn't so much of just being like, oh, you know, salary cap DFS work for DraftKings or best ball work to Underdog. What was unique to both those sites is they did those things super, super well. And it's not that it was an impossible playbook to copy, but I wonder if the takeaway is like, whatever your niche is within the fantasy sports realm, you just do that so fucking good that you naturally bring a lot of people there. And that's the on-ramp, that the actual game type itself isn't actually as important as just doing it incredibly well. Maybe back to our dynasty thing, Brian. What if one of these sites said, we want to be the preeminent dynasty fantasy football site? We're going to have the best site, the easiest way to do waivers, the easiest way to send trades. You can customize your leagues however you want, blah, blah, blah. And you get a ton of that community there on your platform via an incredibly good product.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. This VIP program, what do you think? You know, I mean, I was kind of, when this tweet came out, I'm like, wait, they don't have a VIP program at all, huh? That's kind of interesting that they haven't had one. Maybe another good sign, since they did that, you know, they had that rake deal and stuff like that, they're recognizing a little more than these other, you know, DraftKings and FanDuel, that like heavy volume players and regs and stuff like that are so important to like the ecosystem of a competitive game where you're playing against other humans, you know, as opposed to like sports betting, which, you know, obviously it matters on what time you get the bet, and someone else getting that bet can affect you getting the line. But leaving that aside, it's not the same as like poker and best ball and DFS, where the players matter to the company quite a bit. I have a biased view, obviously, on that. Maybe someone who owns the business can tell me why a lot of these sites just stop caring about their heavy volume players. So this is a good sign just in general, but it's like interesting that they haven't had a VIP program. So like they could, I'd be interested to know what they actually do going forward.
Yeah. And this has been a thing that I know Underdog has talked about and thought about for a while, and they've had, I don't know their exact titles, but like VP associates, people who will interact with the top players. You know, you get the occasional deposit bonus, you know, the occasional thing, and the way, you know, DraftKings, a couple tickets here, you know, they've done some stuff, but I know that they've wanted to formalize this program and do stuff in a really, in a unique way for a while. So it's been a big deal for them. Like, how much do you think, because this is the VIP program that obviously is catering to the whales, right? The highest volume players on the site. Is this accomplishing just keeping your most active and highest volume players happy? Or is there an actual marketing element to this where you're actually pulling in whales like, oh, look what they get over there. I actually want to come over there.
I'd hope they do both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially with DFS just hanging out there. I mean, that could be another way to attack FanDuel if, like, you're trying to just get that market share, is be like, hey, if you, like, play on FanDuel and you're sick of not getting anything out of it and the games are drying up, you know, if you play best ball, you know, 150 best ball drafts will give you blah, 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 or whatever. This is a problem, though, with best ball, is it's hard to get down, like in DFS. You know, it's not as easy to – you could put 10 grand down at DFS today, like in a millisecond, and it wouldn't even be noticeable by a lot of people. But to do that on best ball, I mean, you have to sit there for hours and hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So, even if you go the slow draft route, there's still a lot of time to making those picks relative to DFS.
That might even be worse because like you have to do, you'd have to do, if you try to time them all for the same time, like to do the same time, like you would have like 1,000 slow ball drafts like that you all, you have to like get done. I guess you get 8 hours no matter what, but yeah, it would seem like it'd be hard. Like you could, it'd be like multi-tabling once a day when you're, multi-tabling 100 tables for an hour.
Well, Brett, for the VIP stuff, because a lot of the stuff that DraftKings does with their VIP program, you don't ever seem to have interest in it. You're either saying I don't want to go on these trips, or we're on here making fun of a truffle hunting trip in Italy or whatever.
That part of that is me being, me and right. Like you, cause you would like the truffle hunting trip. Let's be real. Right.
Yeah. You know, before I had a child, I could envision Lauren and I going on a nice truffle hunting trip on DraftKings dime. Sure. That sounds like a lovely time.
Yeah. I mean, I come from poker, so I always wanted to rake back.
Yep.
That's all I wanted. It was just give me 20% rake back.
So, but when you hear VIP program, then in your head, for I guess when I heard it, I'm like picturing more that like white glove, personal rep, concierge service for the top players. But are you thinking of it more in an expanded rake back program that would be something more global?
Like how, what do you mean by global?
Well, I'm just wondering, like you getting excited about the VIP program. Like I was imagining it more like the stuff that you get from your DraftKings play. Like I'm saying, what from Underdog would make it more enticing than the kind of perks you get from DraftKings?
Oh yeah. Like for me specifically, it's probably not going to change anything. Right. But like, I think just the general sentiment of, hey, we don't have a VIP program, let's fix that, is just a good business move in that general direction of keeping your high volume players happy. I think it's going to help best ball in general. And I have no idea what they're going to do or what they should do. I mean, I like rake back, but I guess if people like truffle hunting nowadays, Pete, then give them the truffle hunting package, So, I mean, I'm not really suggesting on what was definitely would be the best thing. I just think keeping the ecosystem alive is good for best ball, and it's good for us when we play and content and all sorts of things.
I don't want to belabor this because this has been a common theme on LOLs over the years, but it's like, if you're going to do those fun, like, or random gifts and, there's the DFS or the DraftKings motorbike and, stuff like, you have to make content around that. If someone buys the motorbike, like you have to go and film them getting it and show them like riding around their neighborhood on their DraftKings bike. Or if someone goes on the truffle hunting trip, you need to pay to have someone go and at least get a photo shoot or whatever. Like imagine Nerdy Tenor here in the chat, like frolicking through an Italian meadow. I would watch that footage of Daniel hunting for truffles. It's like, you got to show the people that this stuff exists. That's what it's supposed to be used as a marketing tool.
Right. I mean, if we're going to give advice from this show, it's definitely do more content with the players and more 2 months, 2 million type of stuff,
I did just confirm this, Brian. Is this like breaking news here? Can I pull this up?
Sure. Yeah. No, I told you we're going live today. We're going.
Well, when I set up the show, it must have been this morning, and I went to put In-Game Syndicate in the show notes, and I went to the site, and it did not look like this. So this is new.
No, it was in between then and now. Yeah. Yeah. We wanted to make sure it wouldn't break before tonight, so we loaded it up early. But yeah, we're gonna do a show on the YouTube channel and Game Syndicate tonight at 8 Eastern, 7 Real America time. Me, Yuta, Nerdy, and Adam.
All right, we got the In-Game Syndicate here. I am going to subscribe.
What's those stats? You got a plug in there?
Oh yeah, this is my like YouTube analytic plug. Is this Adam's old YouTube that was like rebranded?
Yeah, he started a couple weeks early and put his name as the YouTube channel. I'm like, that might confuse people.
This feels a lot like the Randone Bachelor vlog channel repurposed as the Ship It Nation. What if you have all the reality TV fans coming to see Adam's channel and they're like, what's this in-game syndicate bullshit?
Yep. No, Adam's shows will be exactly the same.
Okay. So we got in-game syndicate. We got the new logo here. Elevate your fantasy sports game with expert knowledge. We got Yuta, nerdy tenor, Brian, a shot across the bow to the spreadsheet socialist. What did you, come up with calling yourself a spreadsheet capitalist?
Like 5 days ago when we were finishing these finishing touches. Yeah.
So we got the comprehensive video says we're going to get lineup reviews, game theory, toy game explainers, how to create ownership, ball knowing, and then total training access, monthly pro round table discussions, members only Discord channel access, pro perspectives, expert Q&A sessions. And did you guys settle on a price?
$150
a month.
So the idea is basically like card runners, essentially, except for DFS, best ball, whatever else we end up doing. There's going to be no projections or anything to start or like any sims or anything like that. Mm. Just so people don't get that idea. We might end up doing something like that. But for now, so like it's going to be – we already have like 10 videos or so on the site. But we'll do, you know, we'll put out weekly videos, and then there'll be like a Q&A with members, because some of the concepts can get, you know, pretty tricky.
So what I think my first thought would be, because so much of what you guys are doing is evergreen stuff, what's the thought behind a monthly subscription?
Yeah, well, that was probably one of the hardest things to figure out. Like, I kind of thought of it as like, what would you pay for a lesson from Nerdy Tenor?
Right.
You know, what would you pay for a lesson from Utacow? And back in the poker days, from the good players, like, you got to pay like at least $300 an hour. And that was like 15 years ago. And then also the difference between us and, you know, ETR or whatever is ETR has projections every day. People can't just like cancel their sub. So it's kind of like, I'm assuming there'll be more than normal for this type of business, type of person who just signs up and then stops because they watched all the videos.
Right. Exactly. And that's why it seems like some people have sticker shock with that, but that's the issue you're running into, right? If you did like a regular DFS site thing and you're like, all right, we're going to charge $49 a month or $39 a month. And then someone comes in, downloads every single one of your videos and then pieces out. Like they are, I mean, it's just the worst business model imaginable. Right. So you have to have some premium on, it's almost like it is tough because you're almost wanting to frame it more as this is like a course, like a masterclass type course. And then if you're like, I'm paying $150 for a masterclass course, that's like, that's pretty normal for what would be expected for something like that.
Right. And eventually there'll be 150 evergreen videos of all of our best stuff. We'll probably delete any videos that like aren't needed. Like, I don't know if I'm assuming people will want the Q&As forever, but like, if not, like, it'll just be like the most popular helpful videos down the line.
And I think people have to, not to speak for you, but you guys are trying to do something different than the typical DFS site. You are trying to exist in an entirely different plane. You're not trying to replace a typical content projection, daily churn type site. You are trying to provide a training ground. And like you said, most people, whether you're going to get guitar lessons or whatever it is, the hourly rate you pay for those things is massive. And you guys are actually prorating that relative to what it would be if you charge someone for one-on-one or Nerdy charge. I mean, imagine what Yuta could charge for a one-on-one lesson for someone of just to pick his brain. Like, I bet, how many DFS players do you think, Brian, would pay $1,000 for like a one-hour sit-down where Utakau had truth serum and he had to just answer every one of their questions straight up? I bet there'd be 50 players right off the rip who would pay $1,000.
Probably. And that's another thing too, is like, this is, we're not going to be getting, you know, a guy Googles DFS and then finds our website and then goes, oh, I'm going to sign up for this website, even though I've never played DFS before. It's only going to be guys who play DFS a decent amount. There's not going to be any like beginner videos on like what stacking is and you know, stuff like that. So we also probably have a smaller pool of people to draw from. But yeah, not just like lessons. It's also this was actually Nerdy's idea. Basically, this, most of the ideas for this site was his. He also had started writing a book, and I kind of did too. I wrote some notes down, you know, like if I ever write a book, like I wrote a few pages of ideas I'd want in it. And that's where the first videos that we did are coming from, is those notes. And so his is like a series on game theory, like on toy games getting gradually more and more complicated and how you would beat those. And like my first series is like how to create ownership.
Yeah.
Projections. And I use like my actual data set for MMA and how I specifically do it. And it gets, you know, more and more complicated. The ideas that I use. So it's, I guess what's that old stupid saying, you know, teach a man to fish, you know?
Yeah. Give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely learn how to do it yourself type of thing.
Yeah, and I don't, and again, like I think you would probably say too, like this site isn't going to be for everyone, and pricing this stuff in general, we've had the conversation about Sims. You know, it's that same thing. It's like you want the casual player to be able to use the product, but you also don't want to have the whales get to pay $49 to use this highly effective, high-powered Sim product who are using it across hundreds of thousands of annual entries. Like, it's a really hard thing to juggle. And on top of it, Brian, if you price this at $39.99 and then the people come in and start taking the class, they'd be like, raise the fucking price, dude. Like, this is the goods. This is the good stuff. Gate people out via the price. And I do think in general, it's important to signal to people the quality of the product with the price as well. But I also think it's going to be hard for you to get someone who's like curious, but not entirely sold to get over that price jump.
Yeah. I think you should pay me specifically just for putting Nerdy Tenor behind a paywall. And so he would stop ruining DFS single-handedly. Yeah.
There you go.
Cause
you
now go. At least hopefully going forward, he can go, actually, I have a video that you can watch on my website and Game Syndicate instead of just, you know, giving it away for free.
I remember, I think I mentioned this before, before Silva started at ETR, like he would go on every single podcast. You know, he was a guest on every podcast. Like, it was nuts. You know, he was doing 3, 4, 5 podcasts a week that weren't even regular shows for him, just guest appearing. And then he started at ETR. And I know Adam and Taylor had to reel him in and be like, no, your content is at ETR now. They need to sub to come and get your information. You're not just guesting on every podcast and sharing your thoughts.
So we're going to do, you know, like the idea is like do a video, then a Q&A answering the questions on the video, and then a monthly roundtable with the four of us. And then the YouTube's Adam's just going to market, will occasionally show up on his shows or do who knows what we'll end up doing on the YouTube channel. But like all the videos are like embedded on the site. They're not on YouTube.
I think you guys will probably, via your initial customers and kind of the things they're asking and how they're engaging with you, I bet you'll within a couple months either have new ideas for how to kind of like present or do content, or, you know, maybe tweak how it is. Like, I think you will find out, like, how do we best convey the information and the domain expertise we have to you? How do we package that, get that to you in the best way? I think that feedback from those early customers will help a lot.
Definitely. And the, you know, the idea too is, you know, this is where Yuta is coming in, is that like the no ball type of videos will be his domain. And the first one, Pete, I'll get you an account, was really good. It gets you thinking. So I know a lot of people complain about like his podcast appearances, which are few and far between. And you know, why he didn't give away all his secrets, on our podcast. But,
what's the topic? Can you tell me?
It's mainly MLB.
Okay.
MLB no ball stuff.
Is this dovetailing? Now I can't remember if this is stuff we talked about behind closed doors, so maybe I won't say it. But you had mentioned something that he had an inclination of something he wanted to do with MLB that was maybe different from the status quo. Was that on? Is this in that regard?
I don't know if that was. You'll have to remind me after if it's specifically on there. Which I want you to remind me because I'll tell him to put it on the next one if it's not. Yeah, but like we're and I want to do best ball before the season's over too. So we might have to like break up some of these, and it's really right now we're just like doing a series, right? So like video one of ownership, video two of ownership, video three of how to create ownership. And so like you might have to stop those to start a new topic, because I do want to do some we're going to do, me and Nerdy are going to do something on best ball that's hopefully a little different. And the only thing is, people, we'll talk about this probably as the you know, months go on, is I hate, you know, it's just a pet peeve when like we'll have like a good idea on our show and then like it's talked about everywhere else. And it's like, you guys know we were the first one to fucking say, talk about this idea, and we don't get any goddamn credit, which is, you know, a probably personal failing of mine. But that's the only way I could see us doing like more tools, because tools are a pain in the fucking ass to get. And hard to make money off of too, people. Like rolling in the dough with the draft caddy, for example. But like, if we do have something cool, I definitely want us to like at least think about, why don't we release this? And it won't be contest sims or anything that people were already doing. Like, it'll only be something
new. I do think, you know, CLN mentioning here having an annual subscription, I think either having an annual subscription or having like a pretty clear roadmap, because I think where you would run into trouble is like someone pays the $150, they come in, they see all these videos, they consume them, they're like, great, this was solid, like I'm digging this, what next, you know? Whereas do I let my subscription relapse again? Whereas if you're like, we know there's going to be a new video on this once a month, like I think a roadmap would give probably consumers more confidence.
And we want to like, You're right. Like, there's a bunch of different ways we could go like that. It's just like, I don't know. I kind of want to just get it going, see if anyone cares. There's a chance nobody cares, right, Pete? And this doesn't succeed that much to the point where we want to keep doing it anyway. So,
I love what I just realized that today's Lulz episode had been is me, you helping me brainstorm in the chat my DFS content in season, and me helping you brainstorm your business model for in-game syndicate. So basically, we have just started to use this program to workshop the things we need to work on in our life.
Well, we also workshop other people's business ideas. Like, they don't even ask us, but we still do it.
That's true. Unsolicited advice.
You can't, but you, so I didn't want to do this. My brother convinced me to do this. You can get $25 off any draft caddy. Any draft caddy or Dub Club Adams thing, you get $25 off if you were ever a draft caddy or Dub Club member. Whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Every month or a one-time 25 off?
One time.
So you're saying if you are subscribed to brick75.com, you got and you pay for the draft caddy, that you can get the first month for $125 on your game. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And it's because it'll be tied to that email. Do they have to put in a promo, or it will automatically?
There'll be like a coupon code. I have to get it to you. So you can DM me on Twitter or Discord or whatever. Nice. And I need to get a coupon code for that. So give me a second. So the draft caddy's free for a month.
There you go.
Yeah.
That seems like even if you just wanted to check it out, and like you guys are gonna have a ton of content there. So you could get the draft caddy for free and get all the in-game launch content for 125 for 1 month. So like, that'll keep you occupied.
Once we get the best ball content out, you could get that all for 125 and just do it and draft all your drafts in like a month before the season starts. In theory, that's another reason why I didn't want to do discounts or anything. It's just like it's 150 a month. That's it. No fucking special deals. No,
this is the thing. How human psychology works, Brian, even pricing it at 160 and say you were running a one-time discount to make it 150 would bring more people in. That's just how our brains work.
I know. Yeah. I actually looked that up too. With the $25 off is better than 25% too. Did you know that? Yeah.
So I hadn't crunched the numbers on that, but yeah.
I mean, this is according to the research, according to ChatGPT is if you give a hard number, it's actually better than a percentage off.
Yep. All right, this has been fun. I got to get going because we got ship chasing here at 3 p.m. In a few minutes. Brian, you said your guys' launch show on YouTube. Who's going to be on that tonight?
Utico, me, Nerdy Tenor, and Chip My Money.
Sounds like a good time. Are you guys going to have a podcast feed or keep it video exclusive?
If we do enough content, I'm sure we can put it on a podcast feed.
Nice.
Yeah.
You always got to service the audio listeners. You know that, Brian.
Right. That's something I'm 49.95 baseball. They cracked me up.
There you go. All right, guys. Thank you for hanging out in the chat. Like I said, I got ship chasing at 3, randomizer draft with Canadian's finest Jacob Sanderson tonight at 8 p.m. I also have a new video over on the Deposit Kingdom channel that posted late last night. Been getting lots of good feedback on it. It's 10 takeaways after I've done 50 best ball mania drafts. So just kind of going through different little tips, tricks, pockets of the draft I like, strategies I like, unique to this year of best ball mania. So go check that out on the Deposit Kingdom channel. Check out In-Game Syndicate's debut show tonight, and I'll include the link to the YouTube in the show notes as well. Anything else, Brian?
That's it.
All right, we'll see you guys not next week on Lulz because I will be gone, but it seems like Brian and Davis might get together for a fake Lulz. Maybe you guys can have it at the same time so people can have their routine.
If he's available, I should be.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.